Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. I always get stuck at that point, not knowing what to say next.
Well, we shouldn't say anything.
That makes
sense. If you don't have something good to say, don't say anything at all.
Well,
that's what I've heard.
There's something we have to say, though. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio program. Wait, there's more. Have your credit card. No, that's the wrong one.
Wrong. Right. Yeah.
The Personal Wealth Coach is also a registered investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission.
There you go.
How you like that? And we operate out of Salado, Texas. And if you don't know where that is, you are in the vast majority of people on the planet. I've noticed that when I go away from the local area and I say I'm from Salado, they just look at me blankly like they don't know where Salado is.
Well, do they speak the language?
They speak English.
Oh, okay. Well,
and
that's a good start.
I'm just astonished. Obviously, Salado is the center of the known universe. And it is obviously not. A lot of people think Austin is the center of the known universe. However, in Bell County and in Williamson County, there are a lot of people who believe Austin is the off-center of the universe. So, you know, I mean, obviously, Salado is right in the middle.
The off-center?
No, yeah.
You said the off-center.
The off-center, yeah. So, Austin, in the opinion of many people in Bell County particularly, is way off center.
So what you're saying is it's kind of left of
it's
center?
It's radical. It's left. It's radically to the left of center.
I live there, and I definitely would consider myself radically something. I'm not sure what I am, but it's something strange.
Well, you probably have radial tires on your car, too.
Mm.
That's another radical thing. Anyway, if you'd like to, the Personal Wealth Coach actually is a radio program that discusses things generally of an economic or portfolio or investment.
And by portfolio, we don't mean artist's portfolio or photographer's
investment
portfolio.
Investment portfolio.
Yeah, there we go.
Is there another kind of portfolio?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can, a book can be a portfolio, and an artist has a portfolio. They show up and say, well, let me manage your portfolio. And they hand me a stack of drawings. And I go, well, I think we need to diversify?
That's wired. Or weird or something
weird.
Like that.
I before E except for weird.
Yeah, I before E except after C.
Sounding
that's weird.
An A,
that's weird.
Neighboring way, that weird is just weird.
Yeah, weird is just weird. Anyway, the telephone number to call in here if you would like to interrupt our reverie about insignificant items.
I think it's very significant. The pronunciation of weird is a very significant item for most people's lives, I think.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very.
Got to remember that. Anyway, the telephone number's in here, 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County. Otherwise,
1-866-597-1400.
And so,
yeah, see, nobody wants to talk to us.
Nobody wants
I don't want to talk to us. Yeah, I'm not listening.
They're all probably getting ready for whatever that thing is that happens today.
Tomorrow? Yeah, the Super Bowl is on Sunday.
Oh, well, why are they talking about it today?
I don't know. It seems like a big lot of talk about something that's not even happening today. It's strange. Well, I guess we talk about Janet Yellen, and she's going to be officially in the chair as the chairperson. Do we even call her chairman anymore?
She's
chairperson.
Yeah, something like well, actually,
chairperson of the Federal Reserve. She's getting in there on Monday.
She was elected on Thursday unanimously as the chairperson of the Federal Open Market Committee.
But she's not there yet. She's getting sworn in on Monday.
That's a different the chairperson of the Federal Reserve is a different person. It's usually the same person, but still, it's a different office than the
Federal Open Market
FOMC, which is the one that when they make the announcement, everybody gets really excited. When the FOMC makes an announcement and its chairperson then does a press conference and all of that.
Well, people see, Market Watch is calling her chairwoman.
Chairwoman?
Yes. They say as Fed chairwoman. This is an interesting.
I don't think we have a consensus on this yet.
This is just as weird as the word weird.
What if she's just the chair? Well, then people would tend to sit on her.
Yeah, yeah, we don't want. Work, yeah, no. She.
Do you know where that came from?
What, the chair?
The idea of the chairperson.
Yeah.
There's only absolutely. One in a great hall of a manor in the medieval period. There was typically only one chair, and the person
there
who
a lot of
sat,
benches and one chair.
Right, the person who sat in that chair was in charge, and you know, most everybody else stood.
It's not just history. In most of Africa, that's still the case. Chiefs have a special cushion or chair that they sit on, and everybody mm-hmm. else sits on the ground.
And thereby came the chairperson.
That's the chairperson.
Well, obviously,
that's
you know,
pretty important. You're going to sit in a chair.
But then there came the execution officer.
Or executive officers, yes.
The chief.
In charge of terminations.
Yeah, in charge. And I think, you know, even though the executor, he could be called the head man, you know.
Who's your estate executor? You're naming
who,
that in your will?
Who will be executing?
The estate.
Yeah, that's language is an interesting thing, to say the least. Well,
yes.
The Dow went on vacation.
Yes.
To the Caribbean.
Or someplace south, anyway.
Well, it was diving.
Definitely diving south.
And the trader in Barron's said, Dow dives 5.3% in January as Fed pulls back. Now,
would you rate the splash rating on that dive? Would that
I don't know, but if the Fed was on the side pulling its back,
right,
which is painful.
That doesn't sound like fun.
And the
which
Dow,
Fed though?
And
was
the,
it?
Well,
this is a chair, new chairwoman
I
that's
don't know.
Pulled her back already.
And the emerging markets hit headwinds.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
And I think one of the fascinating things. And we've discussed this before, is the emerging markets hitting headwinds because China slows. Huh?
Yes.
So China is only accelerating at about 7%, high 6%
yes.
per year. It's accelerating at that rate instead of 7-point-something percent.
See,
and
we
call
should,
that slowing down?
We could use this language when talking to police officers if we get pulled over. We're making humorous references to the fact that most journalistic reports about the market or about the economy are just wrong. The words that are used are wrong. Every piece of it is wrong. If I told a police officer I was slowing down because I wasn't accelerating as fast, he would ask me to step out of the car and to breathe into a little device.
Mm-hmm.
That so journalists need to think about that a moment.
About breathing into devices.
Yes.
I think they maybe are breathing up from straws that right. have things on the end of them.
If your economy slows down, it means it shrinks. It means it's not moving forward at the same rate that it was. So if you think a flatline economy is just exactly the same as it was last year, not better, not worse. If it slows down, then it's worse than it was last year. If it's growing, then by definition, it's better than it was last year. To say that if you're growing, and you're still growing rather quickly, but you're not growing as quickly as you used to be, to say that's slowing down is, there's some issues there. I think there's some very fundamental misunderstandings going on here in the nature of the economy in these mm-hmm. headlines.
And by the way, despite all of the headlines and noise that's being made about this decline in the market,
right,
and they say, this is the worst January since, I don't know, sometime.
January
since
2009
or
yes,
something like that.
2009.
But
it's been 5 years since it's been this bad.
And this is the worst drop since August.
Of what year?
Last year.
Oh. Oh, my.
Well, actually, the August drop was greater.
Yeah. When they have to say this is the worst January, it means that there are other months that have been worse than this. It's just not been in a January. So we have to say, okay, this is the way headlines work.
Yes.
If you can't make a statement, this is the worst month since 2 years ago. Oh, wait a minute. What about January? When was the last time we had a January that was, years ago.
And August was the worst decline since May and June.
Yes. They really, really love leap years in the market because then they could say, this is the worst leap year in 19 years, or I guess 19
well,
doesn't work.
It's got to be divisible by 4. Yeah, 18 years so, might so work.
That's even kind of an issue.
That Which tells you a lot about what's going on in the market
18
right now.
18 is not a divisible by and, 4.
and interestingly enough, the headlines that I was reading today about why the market declined in January tend to all focus on, quote, the Fed. And this is the fascinating thing.
There's some really, really big reasons.
The Fed has started lowering its bond buying last year, and the market promptly went up.
Right.
And so when there's some continue with exactly what it was doing before and what it said it was going to do next, the market dropped. And the fascinatingly tell you, is a correction, it's called, in the market. It really isn't a correction per se. It's just that's what they call a random dip in the market that has no rational explanation. It's called a correction. And I think the reason they call it a correction, really, truly, down deep inside.
I have no clue. What else do they call it?
Because they're going to call it something. They're going to say, this is why it happened, and then they have to publish corrections later to explain that that really wasn't why it happened. But what I'm saying is that this decline in the various is a very simple thing that we talked about last week and Jake got in trouble for because he said that we're herd animals.
Yes.
And we behave, and I think there's a lot of validity in that. We tend to behave as we see the people around us behaving. This is something that causes a lot of inefficiencies and a lot of pain. And the people who do exceptionally well over the long term, and there's actually a fairly good number of those, are the people who ignore what the people around them are doing and rather focus on the facts. So the end result is that right now the people around you are the people, at least if you're watching the, if you watch the market indices from day to day, you may conclude that all those guys out there must know something you don't know, which is, by the way, the general belief. And then because they know something, you don't know what it is that they know that you don't know. And by the way, if you ask them, you'll find out that they don't know either. But if they're selling, then it's probably something bad and you ought to sell too. Unfortunately, there is absolutely no evidence in all that we've done, all that we've studied, all that we've seen, to suggest that there's any truth in that. And it, by the way, also occurs on the upside as well as on the downside, because on many, many occasions, the stock market will rise for no particularly good reason at all, except that it's rising. And those are the times you have to be quite afraid. It'll rise sometimes for years, a lot, like it did in the 1990s, in the face of ample evidence that it is becoming massively overpriced. And now we base that on history. So right now, the market is not overpriced. It wasn't overpriced before it started down, which means that all other things taken together, this is a short-term correction.
There are a couple of other things that are probably pertinent here.
Pertinent. Ooh, you're using one in big.
One of the things is a year ago now, the new 8% tax on investment income if you make more than $250,000 went into effect, and the capital gains rate went up from the top rate went from 15 to 20.
Well, did it actually? No, did go capital gains rate went to 20?
Top tax rate. Yep. And what we're talking about here is that took place a year ago. Now we're moving forward. We've got a whole year that's passed and people are starting to look at their taxes. And I have had the strangest experience where people say, tax rates have gone up. Let me go ahead and sell the stuff that I have so that I don't... Wait, you do have to pay that down. I think that has an impact on the market. People are getting their tax data in. And they're looking at it and they're saying, oh, I got a 1099. I've got a, this, what? I'm paying taxes on this now and higher taxes than I expected. And it causes instability. And when we looked at, when I look back at tax acts that take place in a year, generally the market responds to them the beginning of the following year. Why that is probably something to do with the psychology of all of us. But when you get a little statement in the mail that says this is what you're going to owe, you go, oh my goodness, what am I doing? I think that has an impact on some of the market. I think there's the fact that we had a massive cold spurt right through the middle of the country, including New York, D.C., and then all of us experienced it here in the South. I think that had an impact. All of that together, and the fact that the market hasn't really dropped for, what, 3 years, 2.5 years?
Obviously, I don't have enough clients who make over $457,600 as a couple. So I just wasn't paying a lot of attention to that new 20% capital gains rate.
Right. Well, the 3.8% rate is kicking in, and anybody
right.
who makes more than $250,000.
Right. But that effectively would raise the capital gains
to rate. To 23.8%.
Yeah.
And that's
you'd have to make more than $457,600.
Unless you have a trust, and then all you have to make is $5,000.
Well, all depends. You have to, if you distribute it, it won't work that way.
Capital gains inside the trust.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about you distribute the income from the trust. Anyway, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, income from the trust is interest and not right. not dividends or capital
okay,
gains.
Okay, got you. Right.
See. We're having a sparring on tax data here, and it's probably driving the listeners crazy.
Tax
code is too complex.
What we're saying is, by the way, trust tax rates are absurdly high, and the way one gets around the trust tax rates is to distribute income or distributions within the trust to regular human beings. And those regular human beings pay a much more reasonable tax rate, even though it may be not completely reasonable in some people's minds. It's one of those things that the law was passed because people were stuffing a lot of money in trust for that didn't have to pay taxes. And so Congress, as usual, went overboard and excessively taxed trusts.
So now the purpose of trusts originally was to take care of people that couldn't take care of themselves. This is kind of important, I think. It was then utilized by very wealthy people to say, well, our kids are incompetent and they can't take care of themselves. They're running around drunk at age 14, so we're going to put this money in a trust for them. And then Congress said, wait a minute, you're putting a lot of money in a trust that doesn't really affect these people. And I think that was even a rarity of the trusts at the beginning when they started cracking down on them. They were still being used primarily for people that couldn't take care of themselves.
I think a lot of that was an attempt to avoid taxes. But
yeah,
there's a fascinating thing to me, and I don't pay a lot of attention to politics, as a lot of people know. If the big fight last year and the year before was to keep the capital gains rate from being raised, how did we wind up with a 20% capital gains rate?
It's a good question.
Doesn't it somehow equate to the fact that a majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives would have had to vote for an increase in taxes?
Nope.
It had to pass the House.
It was in the Affordable Care Act.
No. I'm not talking about the Medicare increase. I'm talking about the actual raise in capital gains taxes. Was that all the way back in the Affordable Care Act, or did it happen after that? Because I thought it... Never mind.
Yeah, I did have to get through the House, you're right, but I think it went through the House at a point when... I can look that up.
Okay, why don't you look that up? Anyway, I've got some... We're talking about not paying attention to the bad news. There's some good news I think is worth paying attention to here. By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and our telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or...
1-866-597-1400.
The GDP is good.
Yes, this has been largely ignored by the media as they're worried about how bad the market's doing, how badly the market's doing.
On Thursday, the The Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is one of my favorite organizations, the BEA, and it's full of bureaucrats, but it's still one of my favorite organizations in the world. They produce some of the best data that I ever have a chance to crunch on, and I love crunching on good data. It's very healthy. Has lots of fiber in it. Anyway, the real gross domestic product of the United States grew at an annual rate of 3.2% in the fourth quarter. In the third quarter, the final data is now in. That's a 4.1% annual rate in the third quarter of last year. And the whole year of 2013 then comes in at 2.7%. Now, you might think that 2.7% doesn't sound like a huge growth rate, but in light of the size of our economy and everything else that's been going on, that is a real good rate. And it gets,
you compare it to that of Europe, and you'll see it's an amazingly good rate.
And it is. What's really important is that during the year we saw an acceleration in GDP as the year progressed, and there is no indication, as of today at least, as of the information that's out there today, that acceleration has slacked off a bit. That's the big news, folks. That trumps everything else out there, and it is being conveniently ignored by the markets right now.
The bill that raised the capital gains was the fiscal cliff bill, January 1st of 2013. They passed it and said, we're going to raise the capital gains rate to 20% for people making more than, a couple making more than $450,000 or an individual making more than $400,000.
Well, this is my point. I thought the big fight was we're going to hold the line absolutely against an increase in taxes, and yet
That was the big fight. A
majority of the Republicans in the House of Representatives had to vote for an increase in capital gains taxes, or it would not have passed.
I don't think it was a majority of the Republicans. I think it was a majority of the House. Some of the Republicans voted. I don't think it was a majority of them, but a lot of Republicans
were in there. A significant number of Republicans.
Right. This was the fiscal cliff deal that we actually got traction. There was a lot of stuff that moved forward because of that. We have, and since then we've continued forward. This is something that is fascinating to me. In the last several months, it looks like Congress is actually starting to cooperate with each other a little bit. And that's a little strange. I generally have an audio book of some sort while I'm driving back and forth to work. And I didn't download an audio book, so I was listening to Rush Limbaugh. And I was listening to Sean Hannity. And they are so upset at the leadership of the Republicans. It sounds like they are more upset at the Republicans than they are at the Democrats.
Well, we're coming up on an election.
Of course.
And what they do is they get upset at Republicans as we approach an election so that more Democrats will get elected.
Well, that's how they keep their jobs.
Right, because if there are Democrats in charge,
they don't have anything to complain about if there's a lot of Republicans in charge.
And for those of you who want to look at as Rush Limbaugh said, follow the money. If you want to look at the motivations there, they're really very, very simple. Rush Limbaugh's ratings during George W. Bush's administration, when the Republicans controlled both houses, really weren't all that good.
No, they weren't.
And Obama was the best thing that's... Well, I don't know.
Bill Clinton is the reason why he became popular.
He's hurting in one area, though, and he probably will try to correct that.
What's that?
Diane Pelosi is no longer the speaker, or whatever it is.
DeLisi.
No. Pelosi is no longer the speaker of the House of Representatives. Our local representative used to be DeLisi. It's not Diane.
It's
Pelosi. Whatever her name is. But her last name is Pelosi, I know that. Margaret Pelosi, something like that.
No.
Something. Anyway, look up Pelosi.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. This is horrible. We're having one of those Pelosi.
Nancy Pelosi is no longer the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and she is such a beautiful target. She is just, she gets out there and makes statements that All he has to do is repeat them on his show, and his ratings go up 10 points.
So they're upset that there is a Republican in charge in the House, and they don't have...
They don't have anywhere near, I mean...
I mean, if you have a Republican in the House, the Senate, and the White House, then you don't really have anything to... you can't complain properly, because you get what you ask
particularly
for.
Particularly if you had wall-to-wall conservatives, and anything goes wrong, then...
We're kind of bashing them right now, but what I was trying to say here is that nobody, if you put some scrutiny on what happens in the House of Representatives, nobody's going to like what happens in the House of Representatives unless you're just a really sick person. Nobody has ever liked what's going on in the House of Representatives.
I would not agree with that.
They put deals together that are for the benefit of certain parts of the country and not the benefit of other parts of the country.
And those parts of the country like that.
Oh, yeah, that's the point. You've got this nasty thing, these deal-making things that in order for some people to win, other people have to lose. And that's a pretty common thing in the House of Representatives.
And whoever the winning side is likes it.
Right now, we have the ability to put the scrutiny on what's going on in the House of Representatives. And we look at there and we go, oh, man, this is disgusting. But if you look at, I mean, the statement about legislation and sausages, you don't want to know what's in there. Just eat it. This is the reality of our system, is that I was listening to Sean Hannity, who I really have had a lot of respect for Sean Hannity, and it's kind of waning recently. And he was talking about how the House of how the Speaker of the House, Boehner, doesn't have leadership. He's not a statesman. He doesn't go up and he makes speeches, and he doesn't get in front of the American people. And I look back at all of the speakers of the House that have done that.
They generally go down in a blaze of glory.
In massive destruction. Newt Gingrich did that.
Yeah.
And destroyed himself.
Well.
Pelosi did that
literally,
and destroyed herself.
Well, I don't know. Pelosi is still the majority
minority leader. Yeah, but she destroyed her majority.
Right.
She became the thing that people could run against. Well, the Democrats have a lot of trouble running against Boehner because he's doing a job that is organizing votes. He's not doing a job that's being in front of the media and talking. And that's the thing. Rush Limbaugh wants him to get up and be a president. Well, he's not a president. Sean Hannity wants him to get up and be an inspirational leader. Well, you don't have inspirational leaders that make that kind of deal. In order for anything to happen in the House of Representatives, the Senate for that matter, deals have to be made. It's all about compromise. If you want no deals, then that's the executive branch. They can write vetoes or not write, as the case may be. Just write them. Don't sign. The veto is there. When it comes to making deals and compromise, that's what the legislative branch is about.
Well, when it comes to running commercials, that's what keeps radio stations on the air.
Right. And but
didn't you love
just
that?
To wrap that up,
okay.
We have a budget.
We do?
We have a budget for the United States of America. For the first time in 6 years, we have a budget, and that's what I was trying to say, that they actually finally got the ideas in their head and said, oh, we actually have to do what the Constitution told us that we were supposed to do.
Actually, be very frank, I don't mind a 20% capital gains tax rate for higher income people. I do think that when you pushed it up, well, even the 23 point something.
Yeah, it's still, I think that's hitting
not,
a point where
it's right at the edge of where I'm comfortable.
When there's already a higher tax rate on other income,
yeah.
What you're talking about there is you pushed it beyond the healthy level.
You know, and it's one of those things where I'd be interested in digging into that one of these days when I have a little more time. We're going to play some commercials, and we'll be back on the other side with more of The Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake.
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. We've got about 18 minutes left in this hour. So if you're going to get a call in, this is the time to do it.
That's a very interesting observation.
What, that there's 18 minutes left in the hour?
Yes. It's really important to understand that. Anyway, and that's, you can call in presuming that today is Saturday, February 1st. If it's some other date, you can call in all you want to, but unless you have a time machine, you probably won't be on the show. Disinflation is occurring, in case you didn't know that.
Tell us the difference between disinflation and deflation.
Disinflation is a reduction in inflation.
Oh, I just thought somebody was dissing inflation.
There's a lot of that going on, too. And the other thing, and of course, deflation is where the overall price of things
negative.
Is going down. It's questionable whether there's disinflation or deflation going on in Europe right now. The actual equivalent of our consumer price index rose 0.07%.
There are definitely parts of Europe that have negative inflation.
Negative inflation. I like that. Negative inflation. That's deflation. We don't like to say that.
Southern Europe is seeing that. I've seen some good things in Spain. Spain's economy is starting to really turn around. They're starting to actually recover. They're coming out of the recession. They still have an unemployment rate that is absolutely staggering. We're talking about the young population, those between 18 and 25, the unemployment rate is somewhere right around 50%, 50.
Right.
Half of the people that want jobs do not have them, and yet their economy is turning around.
One of the things that is good to bear in mind is that deflation right now is a bigger threat than inflation.
Yes.
Not that you can personally do a whole lot about it, but it's there as a threat. It sits there in front of us. One paper that I read suggested that the tapering and ultimate removal, which will probably take most of the year, of quantitative easing,
QE whatever number you want,
QE3,
QE2,
QE1, right, the bond buying by the Fed, may actually relieve the deflationary pressure. One of the things that's going on out there, and this is one of those things that's not well understood, for those of you who actually follow this type of thing, which I think a lot of conservatives do, Milton Friedman talked about the money supply. And he is...
That's what he got his Nobel Prize in.
And of course, he is a great favorite among fiscal conservatives. But you really have to understand that the money supply is not the stock of money. In other words, the quantity of money in the system and the money supply are completely, not completely, but they are different. They're very distinctly different things. The money supply, as Friedman discussed it, the thing that generates inflation if there's too much of it, according to Friedman, is composed of two factors. One is the volume of money that's there, and the second one is the velocity of that money.
Yeah.
Money normally moves around at a velocity factor of about 2.
Boy, we're getting into some really esoteric stuff.
What that means is every dollar
spending the money.
Every dollar on average gets spent twice in a year. That's historic norms.
You buy something from a grocery store, they take that money, instead of just putting it in the bank, they may pay it to an employee. They may buy new products with it. So it's used twice during the year. It's not much faster than that usually.
And there was a time when we had double-digit inflation when actually it was up to about nearly 5 times. In other words, money was moving about very quickly. That has the effect of multiplying the quantity of money times 5. Now, right now, the money supply is moving around at about 1.4, which is really slowly, which means that on average, it takes well over a year, it takes about 18 months for that dollar to get spent a second time when it's spent the first time.
Let me give a quick example. Profits are up for a company. Generally speaking, right now, that company doesn't immediately turn around and give raises to their employees.
Instead, they don't need to, right.
instead, they put that money away as savings just in case mm-hmm. they need it soon. And they're doing that a lot more, which means that they're not turning around and spending that money immediately. That's what we're talking about here.
And it's so what we have is an awkward situation where, despite the relatively large, if you want to measure M1, M2, the money supply, the money volume.
Is that a rifle? That's a rifle, isn't it?
Well, actually, it's the quantity of money that's sitting there in various kinds of deposits. What happens is
the Abrams deposit.
When we have a recession, the money slows down. People don't want to spend their money. They want to just save it. They want to hang on to it. And by the way, paying off debts does not constitute spending money. So if you're taking, like many people are right now, 10% of your income, mm-hmm. and instead of spending it,
you're paying off debts.
You're paying off debts, and you have another 10% that you're putting in savings.
That's 20% of your income that isn't being spent, really.
In effect, what you've done is your monetary velocity is 0.8. And yes, the bank may loan some of that money back out again, but when you look around and realize that there is a decline, the quantity of outstanding debt on people's credit cards, what's called rotating debt.
Revolving credit,
Has been declining. So that
is all very good things.
That's not a multiplier. That is a demultiplier of money. Banks are reducing the amount of money they're loaning in general. There's another thing out there that is a strong indicator that we are seeing a slowdown in the velocity of money, and that is that the new issuance of mortgages has fallen to a 5-year low.
One quick moment here. A lot of people have heard about there's a relationship between inflation, deflation, and unemployment. What is the proper employment level that won't allow too much inflation? The reason is because...
Very good question, but nobody's got an answer to that one.
Well, there are
they
people
used to
that
think they had
written...
One.
Mortensen wrote a good... he won his Nobel Prize basically talking about the concepts here. And it has to do with the habits of people that are employed versus the habits of people that are unemployed. If you're unemployed and you're looking for a job and you get some money, you're far more likely to spend the money slowly than you are if you have a job and you have a really, really good rate of income that you can turn around and spend it quickly. You think you're going to have a job for a while, you may actually get more debt than you're making right now and say, I'll pay it back when I get a raise. People out there listening have probably heard that statement before in their lives, maybe from their own mouths. You're not hearing it very much right now. When unemployment rates get as high as they are, people spend less money. Even when you give them money from the government to say, all right, we've been paying this insurance rate to pay for people when they're unemployed. Here's some money. You're unemployed. They don't spend it as fast, which slows that down. Anyway, that was another little piece to add to the puzzle.
There's another factor in this particularly complex equation of why we have very, very low inflation. And it's one that, on the surface, we look at it and say that's really, really good. And that is, in the early 2000s, running up to fairly recently, about 2008, I think, the cost to employers for medical coverage, in other words, the medical cost to employers, was rising at double-digit rates.
Yeah.
And it was averaging around 12% a year. Last year, we now have the data in for 2013, employer medical costs, this is basically premiums for health insurance, rose 3%. Now, you might think, well, you know what, that doesn't make any sense. I've heard all these things about Obamacare raising the cost. Well, the fact is, across the board, we had a rise in medical costs to employers. This is just to the employers. Employer medical costs only rose 3%. Now, if you look at the fact that wages did not go up measurably during the year. Productivity did.
Mm-hmm.
And you run all of the elements across the board and take a look at the way employers, the cost of having people employed, there's a big, big bottom line that comes out of that, and that is that the cost of employment to employers across the board last year dropped.
Dropped. I thought wages didn't go up.
No,
they
but
stayed
you,
the same.
Look at the,
medical costs went up a little
went
bit,
up a
3%.
Little bit. But what happened is the net effect is they're laying off higher paid people and hiring lower paid people, so that the net cost of employment to employers last year
went down.
Went down. Now, that you can say that's moral, that's immoral, that's good, that's bad.
It doesn't matter. That's not what we're looking at.
But what it boils down to is employers put less money out into the economy to be spent by their workers or to be spent by medical insurance companies or whatever than they did the year before. And there is the big driver of inflation is not just wages, but total compensation. And when total compensation drops, and it did last year, then deflation is a real threat.
Yeah, I think people so often send us emails or talk to us about opinions that we've given about the rightness or wrongness of some law. And that's pretty rare. We don't generally get in, like with the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare Act. There's good stuff and there's bad stuff in there. We're not going to say this is a great law or this is a bad law. What we're going to say is it's the law. We have to look at the impact that the law has on the economy. It's not about whether we like the law or whether we dislike the law. Anybody that really reads the law is going to find things in there that they like and things that they don't like. And it's going to be influenced by the way they think politically anyway. Our job is to look at the ramifications of the reality that we live in today. So when we're looking at people laying off higher income people to hire lower income people, well, we talk about this and we say, or less money's going out. I almost would guarantee that someone out there would send us an email saying, you guys just like the fact that all these people are getting laid off. And I have to say this because we don't say it regularly on the program. Whether or not we like it, it's happening. So we have to measure it. We have to say, what's the impact? How do we react to the reality of today? Not how do we dislike or like the reality of today. I tend to like the reality of today, tend to like it just about all the time. Our ability to respond to our environment is the only thing we really have as a choice. And if instead of looking ahead and saying, this is how I'm going to react to the environment and move forward, instead we complain about the fact that things aren't the way we like them, that's kind of the definition of not being successful.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway. What it boils down to is right now, wages and benefits are rising at about the same rate as inflation, which is around 2%.
Right.
Productivity is rising significantly from year to year, which means that, and this is an important issue to recognize, the estimate for this coming year on corporate, the increases in corporate profitability, which we call earnings, is 5-7%. Cost of employment is going up at 2%.
2%, right.
If inflation, by the way, is running along around 2%, that means it is flat. So what you have is employers are in the position where annually their employment is not costing any more. The productivity is going up, which means each employee is making about 2% more stuff every year, but not getting a real... Now, when we talk about productivity, by the way, inflation is pulled out of that number.
Right.
So if inflation is 2% and productivity is up 2%, it really was up
4%
nominally. So what it boils down to, we have a pattern going on across the economy right now. Corporate earnings are up faster than cost of employment. And the GDP is rising faster than the cost of employment.
I can make some predictions about this.
Which falls right into the pattern that we've seen since 1975. To give you some idea, since 1975, industrial production in the United States has more than doubled. But the buying power, and that's after inflation, it has more than doubled.
Mm-hmm.
But the buying power of people working in manufacturing facilities has dropped by about 25% of their wages.
Right.
Not because, by the way, the stuff is being sent overseas, but because electronics and robots and things
computers are
doing things much more efficiently than they were, and we need fewer and fewer people. The demand is down, therefore the price will go down.
Now, I'm going to make some predictions about this, and these are predictions that are fairly easy for me to make because they follow a pattern that is, you were just saying, we're following a pattern that makes sense. When productivity goes up, earnings for corporations go up, and these things happen together. When that happens, eventually wages will rise. This isn't a guess. This is the way things work. Eventually, corporations look around and say, I'm going to give a raise to these employees because they're working so well. All it takes is a few corporations doing that, and other corporations, their employees look over and go, hey, I could work over there. They just got a raise.
I started to say it's a supply and demand thing.
Right.
As long as you've got a lot of people looking for work.
As our productivity goes up, it doesn't go up as fast as the demand in a lot of cases. So as our earnings are coming up, we've got to meet this shortfall. We've got to fill back up the savings accounts and so on for the corporations. Once we get there and they have a lot of extra money, they have to either distribute that money back to their shareholders or they have to reinvest it in their company.
You think that's true, but in fact what they've done mostly is just sit on it.
Right. Well, at this point, that's true. But shareholders aren't going to sit for that for very long. Over a period of years, shareholders say, okay, you've got too much money on hand. It's happening at Apple right now. The shareholders at Apple are looking at the fact that Apple has masses of money, and their earnings are not responding the way they used to. They're obviously not reinvesting in the same sort of new technologies that they did before. How long is it going to be before the current CEO gets replaced because he's not looking at future spending of that money to increase their profits? That's what we do as shareholders.
Yeah,
we say, hey, what's going on here?
When we see
that turnaround come,
by the way, then we will be looking at a bull market cranking up. But
right.
For right now, what we're seeing across the nation, both in individual households, actually what we've got
time.
Is the news. We'll be back next hour with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.